This call is now being recorded.
Right. Hello, everyone. This is Jonathan Robinson speaking. I'm not going to say good morning because I already understand that it's not particularly good for those who had to get up at 2 or 3 in the morning on the West Coast. It is a serious point, and we will have to think about this, the time slots. So you've got a set of diary dates for the next meetings, and we'll have to think a little bit about how reasonable the time slots are, but we'll come back to that. So, Glenn, if we could kick off with a roll call, that would be great, please.
I'll do that for you, Jonathan. Jeff Newman?
Yeah, sorry, here. Took me a minute.
Jonathan Robinson?
Present.
Ching Chao is absent, and he has given his proxy to Jeff Newman. Mason Cole?
Here.
Yohef Kieran? Not yet on the call. Volker Greiman?
Present.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Lanray Ajayi?
Present.
Dai Jamil?
Present. Sorry, I was on mute. Present.
John Berard is absent, and he's given his proxy to Dai Jamil. Brian Winterfelt was on the call, and he was on with another person who was the primary person on the call. So we asked that person to leave, and unfortunately, Brian disconnected as well. So he will probably be calling back. Peter Rintforth?
Present.
Oswaldo Nuova?
Present.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Present.
Maria Farrell, not yet on the call. Wendy Salsa, not yet on the call. Magali Pazello, not yet on the call. David Cake?
Present.
Thank you.
Joy Lidicote is on the Adobe Connect. She cannot connect to a telephone line, but she will be listening to the audio cast for the vote. Wolfgang Kleinwächter, not yet on the call. Jennifer Wolf,
present.
Yohef Kieran has just joined the call, and so has Brian Winterfelt. Thank you very much. Over to you, Jonathan.
And Alan Greenberg, present.
And Alan Greenberg, I'm very sorry. And for staff, we have Margie Milam, Marika Koenig, Barry Cobb, David Olive, Barbara Roseman, Rob Hogarth, Brian Peck, and myself, Glenda Saint-Gervais. Have I left off anyone? Thank you, Jonathan. Now it is over to you.
Thanks, Glenn. So moving on then to 1.2, could we have any update to statements of interest, please? Hearing none, I'll move on to the review and amend agenda, 1.3. Are there any comments or points that anyone would like to make on the agenda before we proceed with it? Thank you. So we will now move on to the pending project list. Now, I am a little uncertain here as to who normally reviews the changes. Actually, I realize in stepping this through. And so it's something which I think the chair has normally done. I must say we reviewed the agenda, and so if you'll forgive me, in my new status as chair, I haven't prepared for a review of the changes. So I'm going to have to take it that you have all looked at this. I have it in front of me, but I would like any comments or questions on any changes to that project list. It is something which I think we need to come back to because it's ever more full and is going to need some work on prioritization. But if I could have any comments or input on that, that would be great.
Yeah, this is Peter. Just as being a new member, it would be good to have some clear information on if there is any need for additional members of the working group.
Yes, it's a very good point, Petra. I mean, I think it needs a more thorough review, and in terms of both contributions and prioritization, in my view. And so it is something we will come back to. But you're right, that is one key element. I've noticed that there's been some quite enthusiastic responses to a couple of the new working groups that have formed, yet we haven't necessarily got an even distribution of contributions. So, yes, it's a good point, and thank you. Right, so I think I'm going to move straight on to some introductory remarks I prepared. So if I could have that slide up, it would be great, please. You'll bear with me one moment and we'll put the slide up with a couple of things. So I thought I would take advantage of my new status as chair to add a couple of introductory remarks. I've already been told, questioned as to whether we actually really need 10 minutes, but it is an opportunity to say a few things to make sure that we start off in as positive a way as possible. So I've just prepared one slide for you to look at. And really the very first thing I wanted to do was make sure I provided a very warm welcome, in particular to the new councillors who have just joined us. And I'm reluctant to start with a cliche, but as you well know, Fadi has been promoting his theme of a new season for ICANN, and there is a sense of general sense of sort of optimism and new opening and opportunity. And you know, I think we should try and embrace that as a council, both from my personal point of view as a new chair, from the point of view that we've got some fresh blood, as it were, on the council, and linking in with what's going on in the broader community. So very much like to take the opportunity to, as I say, provide a warm welcome and hopefully start on as fresh a foot as possible with the new councillors and all of you who've with your varying degrees of experience. We ran an induction call or an introduction call for new councillors earlier this week. It was something I initiated. And in fact, there were some new councillors and some councillors who had previously been on the council. So thank you very much to those of you who did attend. For those of you who didn't, whether you are existing councillors or have just joined the council, it is recorded and available, and that's been sent to the list. And you know, I'd encourage all of you to listen and agree with, disagree with, or add to what's been said there. But my real objective was to start with a sort of baseline and a common starting point, in particular for the new councillors. I'm aware that there's a real danger of just being thrown onto the council and expected to perform and work effectively from the outset. And although Glenn has reached out individually to each of the new councillors, an opportunity to make a common introduction seemed to me to be a good idea, and we can develop on that if necessary. I've obviously been thinking hard about where we go and what's important over the next period. You'll hear time and again from people what a critical period this is for ICANN, the broader community, the organisation, and the policy making function within the GNSO. So the question to me that is how best do we navigate this critical period? And it seems to me that, you know, I've tried to pick out three key areas for the council that I think are important. And again, I'll happily take feedback and discussion on any of these. But the three that seem most important to me is our effective working together as a council, our internal workings involves obviously the council leadership, that's myself and the vice chairs, working effectively with the councillors. One thing I noted that was quite interesting in the bylaws is that the bylaws see the vice chairs as vice chairs of the whole council, so they have a responsibility and a duty to the whole council, and to that extent you should see them as your vice chairs, not simply vice chairs of a particular house. Councillors obviously have a responsibility to work effectively with one another. And, you know, I would like to start with a position of trust amongst councillors and assume that our intentions are good and that we're willing to make honorable compromises wherever possible. I think, you know, my impression is that there are some outside of the council who are cynical about our ability to make progress and to work effectively together. And my ambition is to really to do as best as possible in proving them wrong. In order to do that, I think the other area, key area, is that from a strategic point of view is having an effective external focus and working with other SOs and ACs. And I noticed Wolf's comment, which was bang on target in this respect, about the output from the GAC high-level meeting and the interest of the GAC in being involved in policy making as early as possible in the process, which creates, for my mind, a very opportune moment for engaging with or re-engaging with the GAC and other SOs and ACs. Clearly, the councillors represent their different groups and constituencies, and their role in ensuring that they come to the council well prepared, knowing the positions and knowing where there are opportunities to compromise or to rationalise existing positions is vital. But it's also the job of, I believe, of the council leadership to reach out to those SGs and the leadership of those SGs and make sure that that we are effectively engaged with them. Finally, of course, there's also the staff. Well, it was difficult to know whether to put the staff as under the internal bullet in my mind or the external bullet. I mean, clearly the staff aren't part of the council as such, but they're vital to the effective functioning of the council, and there's tremendous knowledge and experience there that's existing and growing. So I'd encourage councillors to take advantage of either of any of the members of staff and their expertise and understanding of some of the issues. And then the third priority I see is clearly this workload management. And even in the short period since Toronto and including Toronto, there are items just piling onto our list. And there's no doubt that we are going to have to organise those and decide on some methods of prioritisation. And I'm seeing this concept of expedited PDPs, and things need to be done in a hurry, and everything's going to be potentially urgent, and so there's definitely going to have to be some work and build some agreement on how to prioritise items on our list. But overall, my final bullet on the slide is really about an ambition to be seen as a productive, effective and respected council. From my point of view, it's personally important, and I would hope that for every one of you, that you'll want to be seen to be part of that kind of council. So those are really the thoughts I have. There's a couple of practical items that we've put out a set of dates for the future council meetings. I'd encourage you to contribute. As I say, I've already heard some feedback on the time slots, and I will give that some more thought and work with you to try and get the most effective time slots. There's never a perfect rotation, but I can accept particularly this slot is challenging, and it may be that we can work on that. I've already done a little bit of work on trying to simplify the way in which we structure motions, and it's going to be an area I'll continue to focus on, that any of the council work is done and written in as plain English as possible, and that's for all of our benefits, so that I think there's a temptation to turn some of our phrasing into legalese, and while it has to be formal and proper, there's no reason why it can't be clear and simple at the same time. I'd like to think that we can run effective meetings that are on time, and clearly a lot of that's down to the responsibility of the chair, but I'd really encourage you. I've realised in having to really roll up my sleeves and be in a position to hopefully chair the meetings effectively, quite what an effort it takes to be prepared. And I know some of you come to these meetings particularly well prepared, but I just encourage everyone as much as possible to do your homework. And I know various of you have got day jobs, other roles and all sorts of things that keep you busy, but to the extent that you can, to pre-prepare for the meetings and read the material, it will undoubtedly make the meetings more effective. So I think I've kept that comfortably under the 10 minutes. I did want to say a couple of things at the outset, and I've said it. So, again, welcome to the new councillors. Really looking forward to working with all of you, and let's move on with the agenda, unless there are any other questions relating specifically to these introductory remarks.
Jonathan?
Yes.
This is Wolf speaking. I'm still not on the Adobe. But if I may, I would like just to emphasize on one or two points which you just mentioned. Well, the one is the vice chair role. Yes, as I'm still the interim vice chair, I would also like to emphasize that we are vice chairs for the whole council, not just on behalf of our house. We are elected by our house, but we have a role with regarding the whole council, and that is something which I would like to emphasize, that it helps also to build trust, which you mentioned on the other side, between the two parts, I mean, at least the two parts of the house, also internally in the houses, and so that this role is to be seen not as a kind of just representative of that house, and he or she, the vice chair, could be approached by anybody of the council, as you, as chair yourself, you can be approached by everybody as well. So that is the role the vice chair should have, and trust building is one of the major items I would like to emphasize, which is necessary between the council as well, in order to be effective and to be effective. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Wolf. Any other comments or other points on this? I suppose I should remark for clarity. I mean, Wolf touched on it. He was the vice chair from the non-contracted party's house in the previous term, and absent and another nominee being put forward is continuing in this role. So just to be clear on that, but that's very helpful. I appreciate both the support and your additional contribution. Thanks, Wolf. Right, moving on to the next item then. There's an item on the consent agenda, and this relates to the IRTP Part C recommendations report. And this is the staff is going to prepare the recommendations for the board. There will clearly be some implementation discussion to follow, but I don't believe there's been any objection to this being on the consent agenda, so providing I don't hear any comment or response now, we will assume that it is acceptable for it to remain there. Perhaps I should remind people that an item on the consent agenda, remind councillors that an item is on the consent agenda because it is presumed to be uncontroversial and going through as a matter of course, but any councillor may object to it and bring it out for further discussion. So that's the position there. Right, seeing no comments or hands raised, I'll move on to item four, which is the a motion that was prepared for Toronto and in the event was, I believe, not seconded and, in fact, ultimately withdrawn in Toronto. Zahid, you were the maker of the original motion, and I believe you're on the call, so are probably now in a position to make the motion, although nominally it's been made by me because I think we were unable to get you to remake the motion online. Perhaps I could call for a second for the motion then.
Jonathan, this is Zahid. I wouldn't mind seconding the motion if you were to still be the proposer. That would be fine as well.
Great. Thanks, Zahid. I would appreciate it if you could, in any event, read the motion prior to the discussion.
Yep.
That would be okay. Thank you.
No problem. Shall I begin whenever you wish?
Please do.
Great, excellent. This is the motion on the initiation of a policy development process on uniformity of contracts to address registration abuse. Whereas the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, RAPWG, recommended in its final report the creation of an issues report to evaluate whether a minimum baseline of registration abuse provisions should be created for all in-scope ICANN agreements, and if created, how such language would be structured to address the most common forms of registration abuse. The GNSO Council requested an issues report to evaluate whether a minimum baseline of registration abuse provisions should be created for all in-scope ICANN agreements, and if created, how such language would be structured to address the most common forms of registration abuse on the 6th of October 2011. ICANN staff has posted the preliminary issues report on uniformity contracts on the 25th of July 2012 for public comments. There's a link to that. ICANN staff reviewed the comments received and updated the report accordingly. The final issues report on uniformity of contracts was published on the 20th of September 2012. The final issues report recommends that the GNSO Council proceed with a policy development process limited to consideration of the issues discussed in this report. And the General Counsel of ICANN has indicated the topic is properly within the scope of the ICANN policy process and within the scope of the GNSO. Therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO will initiate a PDP on the issues defined in the final issues report on uniformity of contracts. A drafting team will be formed to create a charter for a working group, which will be submitted to the GNSO Council for its approval. Following the approval of the charter, a working group will be created for the purpose of fulfilling the requirements of the PDP. Stop.
Thank you, Zahid. We'll turn it over to discussion now. Now, we did discuss this to some extent in Toronto, both prior to and a little immediately after the motion was withdrawn, but I would very much like to hear from councillors on this. So I see, Jeff, your hand is up. If you could initiate the conversation, that would be great. Thanks.
Yeah, sure. Hopefully you guys can hear me. It's kind of early where I'm at. But, I just wanted to bring up the same comments that I brought up at the council meeting, and I know Zahid was not able to be there. But I went back to the actual RAP report and looked at the support for this actual topic, and I have to say I'm deeply troubled at how it even got this far. There were a total of, I think it was 13 people on the work group. I may have that number wrong. I had the stats in front of me at the last meeting. But what happened was, although there was a majority of people that supported this recommendation, if you drill down into it, the only people that supported the recommendation were official members of the business constituency. Everyone else that voted on it, which included the non-commercial stakeholder group, the registrars and the registries, actually opposed this recommendation, but somehow it was classified as strong support, which I think is something that happened in 2009, but hopefully wouldn't happen again. I think the rules have been clarified since that point in time. So the comments I made then, I actually listed the people who were in support of it, I think, during the last council meeting, and it was only BC members. So from my perspective, this shouldn't have gotten this far. I think we need to focus on the actual abuses and then bring those to the attention of the council and the GNSO community as they come up, and not focus on contractual language. I think part of our problem in this community is we focus on the contractual language as opposed to the actual abuses themselves. And then the third thing is that most of the abuses that are being talked about in the RAP group, or that were talked about in the RAP group, are actually being addressed in some form, including these. I mean, you have the REA negotiations that are going on now. You have all the stuff in the new TLD agreements that address these types of things. So from my perspective, we've kind of covered everything here, and I don't think, and the registries are not going to vote in favor of this motion. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Do I have any other comments or discussion on this motion before we move on to the vote? I have a brief comment, and that is to request that a volunteer from staff to clarify to the list the change in rules that Jeff referred to If someone could point us in the direction, could volunteer to point the council in the direction of how the rules have changed on how consensus perhaps was measured and is now measured, so that the point that Jeff makes wouldn't be the same again. Thank you. Jeff, is your hand re-raised?
It's not that there was a rule change. It's that since then we've published all we worked on the PDP process, and we also worked on defining the rules of working groups and how consensus and strong support are determined. And it's not that there was a change. I think for the first time it was actually documented. The reason I don't think that Marika's just posted it up on Adobe. It's not a change again. It's just that it was finally documented, and hopefully those guidelines will now be used by chairs to determine what type of support there was.
Thanks, Jeff. That's helpful. And Marika. Any other comments on this motion before we proceed to vote on it?
Hi, Jonathan. This is Zahid. And I have to be honest, I've just started looking at things. Can I get in the queue?
Please do.
Thanks. I'm looking as I'm speaking. I mean, I'm looking at two different outcomes that came out of two different working groups related to the registration abuse policy. Now, the first one is a final report of the registration abuse policy. Now, I think what we just heard Jeff say, there wasn't a change in any rules to say that there wasn't a consensus or strong support, okay? So that's my understanding. So I think we need to clarify that we need to ignore that aspect. I am looking at the Registration Abuse Policy Working Group final report, and very clearly in the column says that a strong report for exactly what we're about to do. So that's one. Second, I'm also looking at the RAP IDT, which this was another working group that basically worked on deciding what should be a priority and should it be ranked as a priority or not. And I see on the page 6 and 7 of that saying that this is a strong support, and it ranked at number 4 of the several items that the second working group came up with. So we have basically two working groups from the community saying that this is an important issue, that it should go forward. There's an issues report. Their community comments have been taken. And I come back to the same issue, and I also connect this with what you said earlier. You know, we've seen several instances where work done by the community bottom-up is being shoved aside. Our job is not to develop policy in the council. Our job is to manage it, which means that if there are things that come up from a bottom-up process, our job is not to redo them in the council. I think this is an important distinction that we've talked about several times, but we sometimes lose sight of it. And it's important that we don't seem like a council which basically shoves things aside when the community wishes to support them, because then that makes us look like, well, that the council doesn't work. So I think it's extremely important where you have such great consensus, I would say strong support at least, and two different working groups identifying this as an important issue, that we do go forward with it. Thank you.
Thanks, Zahid. Jeff, your hand is up.
Yeah, I would like Zahid to read the names of the people that supported the initial one before making – I know the chair had classified it as strong support, but again, I don't have the document in front of me, and unfortunately my internet connection is not up to par here at the hotel I'm in. But if Zahid, if you would read the names of the people who supported that, you will see that they were all BC members. My point is that it was improperly classified initially. The people who were working on the priorities then just were given that list without looking deep into the who supported it. So I understand your point about the community shouldn't be working on things, but if someone could actually read the list of names, you'll see who supported it and that it did not have support from what we would define as strong support, which is multiple stakeholder groups and or constituencies. It didn't have that in that case. So, I mean, I hear what you're saying. It's not that I disagree, but it shouldn't have even gotten to the prioritization part. It shouldn't have gotten the second working group even looking at the issue. And even when the second group looked at it, we've made these comments as contracted parties from the very beginning. Let's focus on the abuses themselves. Let's not focus on contractual language. And the other thing I'd like entered sort of into the record is the comments from the chair of that REP working group and the prioritization, Mikey O'Connor made some comments during the working session the weekend before in Toronto, and he even agreed that there was not so much support for this one.
Thanks, Jeff. I'm keen to not make this too much of a dialogue, but I realize, Zahid, you would like to respond, and then I see Thomas has joined the queue, and I think we'll have to cut it off after Thomas. Zahid, please proceed.
Thank you. Just two very quick ones. One, first of all, there is absolutely nothing in the drafting team, the actual final report, that tells us who voted, who was the one who strongly supported or did not support this particular recommendation. There just isn't. I'm looking at the report now. There's no list. There's only one list at the bottom of it, which gives you the list of who are the members of the drafting team. That's it. So I'm not sure where we have an exact breakdown of what were the number of people supporters. I'm looking at the report right now, and it doesn't have that. Secondly, let's not forget that if you are to say that the initial final report may not have had, you know, other sort of contracted party houses members within that working group, I mean, they were there, maybe they didn't attend, that's fine. You have a second working group where the attendance is not an issue, where the representation is not an issue, where, again, this has been given a high priority. So I think that the point that maybe, and I can't see it, that maybe some contracted parties didn't attend a specific call, etc., well, that's fine, but it you know, it's moot because you have a second working group giving us the same priority. So that would be my view, and I think we do need to move forward with this. We've reached so far. We've done so much work on this. It would be a shame to now sort of cast it aside. If there were issues about not going for it, then there shouldn't have been an issues report in the first place. Anyway, that's my thought. Thank you.
Thomas.
Thank you, Jonathan. I'm not going to speak to the past and how the work was, or consensus was determined at the time. I want to raise the question of whether this is actually an area of work where the council should focus on at present, given the limited resources. If I were to look at this from an outside perspective, I see hundreds of new TLDs being introduced into the market in the near and midterm future. And I know that a lot of applicants have put an enormous amount of effort into drafting tools and policies to address this particular issue. So I'm wondering whether we best spend our resources on drafting something now that may be superseded or maybe over, maybe outdated by all the ideas coming from the community with the introduction of the new GTLDs. So maybe Zahid can answer the question as to what your expectations at this moment are and whether or not you agree that it might make sense to look at the responses to registration abuse are that the new GTLD applicants have developed, and whether the PDP would be the appropriate response or whether it would rather be an exercise of defining best practice, looking at all the various mechanisms that are going to be introduced.
Thomas, thank you. I think maybe I can respond with the question. Let's put it this way. The PDP would apply to all consensus policy, would apply to all the registries across the board. Any new work that is being done, especially with the new GTLDs, would only apply to the new GTLDs. And so that's the distinction. And the question would be whether any future work done on uniformity contracts would apply across the board. If it will, that's something that we can sort of think about. But I believe that if we're only going to talk in the context of new GTLDs, and that's where our recent requests have been coming from the board and elsewhere, then those policies are only applying to new GTLDs, which leaves the existing GTLDs in a sort of a unique or distinct position where they don't have to have uniformity of contracts. So unless I've got that wrong, I think, you know, we have that distinction.
Okay, I'm going to have to, Thomas, I don't think you've re-raised your hand. Have you re-raised your hand? No, great.
Yes, I have. Okay. Just a quick remark in response to Zahid's comment. you know, even if you, if that was the intention that you want the want a consensus policy as the outcome, wouldn't it make sense from a practical point of view to have that PDP? You know, I'm not saying whether I'm in favor or not, but wouldn't it make sense to inform that PDP work with all the ideas that we might see as you know, starting in half or three quarters of a year's time?
Yeah, well, Thomas, thank you for bringing that new perspective to the discussion. I mean, I think in any event, we are commissioned the report, the issue report. We are obliged to now put it to a vote and take on the recommendation of a PDP or not. And given the time time frame, we need to do that. So. I think we need to proceed to a vote. So if we could do that, Glenn, if you could call for the vote then.
I will do that. I'll do a roll call vote. I would just like to make sure, Jonathan, we have some councillors missing. Wolfgang Kleinwächter and Maria, not Maria Farrell, but Wolfgang Kleinwächter is missing, and so are we able to have an absentee vote for him? Because this motion requires absentee voting. He has not let me know that he cannot be on the call, so can we just perhaps check with Margie?
I need to look at it, Glenn. Why don't you guys proceed, and I'll chime in as soon as I figure that out. It should be just a few minutes.
Thank you very much. Then I will proceed with the roll call vote. John Berard?
This is Aid on his favor, on his behalf, yes.
Thank you very much. Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Yes.
Wendy Salsa.
No.
Your lady coach, will you please vote on the Adobe Connect? Can you hear me?
No.
Thank you. I've seen Joy's vote. It is no. Say, Jamil, for yourself?
Yes, thank you.
Jeff Newman?
No.
Henry Ojayi?
Yes.
Thomas Ike?
No.
Mason Cole?
No.
Ron Winterfeld?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nuova?
Yes.
Joyce Kieran?
No.
Jeff Newman for Ching Chow, please?
No.
Jonathan Robinson?
No.
Peter Rindfors?
Yes.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter is not on the call. Magali Pazello?
I vote no.
Volker Greimann?
No.
David Cate?
No.
Are missing Wolfgang's vote. And so far...
I have an answer, Glenn, if you want me to proceed.
Yes, please.
Okay, under the operating rules, in order to give an absentee ballot, Wolfgang would have had to notify prior to the call. So effectively, under the operating rules, it's treated as being absent, but it doesn't change the quorum requirements or the calculations, and it doesn't reduce the denominator for any vote tabulations.
Thank you very much.
Okay, is that clear?
That's clear, yes.
Okay, thank you, Glenn.
Then we have 7 votes against in the contracted party house.
Glenn, excuse me, it's Maria Farrell. I didn't vote.
Sorry, Maria.
I also vote no.
You also vote no. Thank you. And Wendy Salsa, I have not got a vote. Wendy? Is Wendy on the line still? Yes, she is. Wendy, are you
no.
On?
No.
You vote no.
I'm hearing the...
What is
Thank
your
you.
Vote, Wendy? No?
Wendy has voted no in the chat, Glenn.
Thank you. There are 7 votes against in the contracted party house, and there are 7 votes in favor in the non-contracted party house, 5 votes against in the non-contracted party house, and 1 person absent. So that makes 53.8%. I do not think that the motion passes. Is that so, Margie?
Yes.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks, Glenn. Let's move on to item 5 then, to deal with the second level protections for certain IOC, RCRC names that the drafting team has worked on. Jeff, if you could take us straight into the motion, that would be great, unless you want to make any initial opening remarks, and then we'll put it to discussion.
Yeah, I mean, just before I make a remark, I just had one in closing out that last one I posted in the chat, but for anyone listening to the recording, I just cited to where in the final report for the last item it talks about the tallies of votes, and that's page 95 and 96 of 126, which I posted in the chat. So I just want to clarify the record on that one for anyone that's listening. This is the motion to recommend protections in the first round of new GTLDs for certain Red Cross, Red Crescent, and International Olympic Committee names. I've made the motion. No one has seconded yet. So should we wait for someone to second it or start the discussion, Jonathan?
Jeff, I'm sorry. I hadn't realized no one had seconded. Please, can I call for a second now?
Jonathan, this is Zahid. I'll second.
Thank you, Zahid.
Thank you, Zahid. Okay, whereas... I'll read the motion and then I'll take 2 minutes to just give a little background. Whereas the board resolution authorized the president and CEO to implement the new GTLD program, which includes incorporation of text concerning protection for specific Red Cross and IOC names for the top level only during the initial application round until GNSO and GAC develop policy advice based on the global public interest. The IOC-RC drafting team established, and we need to insert the date, while the GNSO Council has considered a number of different options with respect to protections of both the IOC and Red Cross, Red Crescent terms. In response to the GAC proposal to provide permanent protection for such terms, including at the second level in new GTLDs, the solution proposed by the IOC-RC drafting team to initiate a PDP and provide temporary reservation of the exact match of IOC-RC names was posted for public comment on 28th of September 2012 on November and closed on November 9th, 2012. The GNSO has now initiated a policy development process to evaluate possible protections for certain international organization names in all GTLDs, including specifically whether to recommend policies to protect IOC-RCRC names. And therefore, the IOC-RC drafting team recommends that the GNSO Council recommends to the board that it adopt the second recommendation of the IOC-RC drafting team providing for temporary reservation of the exact match of ISCRC names prior to the delegation of the first round of new GTLDs. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the GNSO Council adopts the IOC-RC drafting team's recommendation to temporarily reserve the exact match of IOC and RCRC second-level domain names listed in Section 2.2.1.2.3 of the applicant guidebook and per the GAC recommendation of September 14, 2011, pending the outcome of the recently launched policy development process involving international governmental and non-governmental organizations, that the GNSO Council thanks the members of the IOC-RC drafting team for its efforts, sorry, I have to scroll down here, in producing these recommendations and hereby disbands the IOC-RC drafting team, and that the chair of the GNSO Council is authorized to forward these recommendations to the ICANN board. Just as a just a comment, this is not, this was, as discussed in the last few meetings, the drafting team spent a lot of time talking about these. It's not meant to imply that there should be any permanent protection. The drafting team, this had the support of the majority of the drafting team, but not all of the drafting team. The non-commercial stakeholder group and Thomas Rickert did not support these recommendations, but they were supported by the registries that were on the group, that were the commercial stakeholder group, members that were on the group, the International Olympic Committee, the Red Cross, Red Crescent representatives. So it did have the support of all those. The comments that were raised in the public comment period were all comments that were previously considered by the drafting team, and therefore no changes were made by the drafting team to the recommendations. It's a temporary reservation simply because it was more practical to reserve those names at this point pending the outcome of the PDP than at some point to pull back those names if it turns out that the PDP does determine there should be protection. We didn't want it to be too late to do something about those names. So with that, there are a number of members of the council that were on that drafting team, and I'm not sure if anyone else wants to add to this.
Thanks, Jeff. That's clear. It's a temporary reservation. There has been some discussion on list already, and I see Thomas would like to add to that discussion now.
Thank you, Jonathan. I would just like to make one or two remarks because I've been on the drafting team. My hesitation was not regarding the PDP part of the recommendation, but regarding the temporary reservation. I have voiced these concerns during the discussions of the working group, and for those who haven't followed that too closely, this temporary reservation is meant or shall be installed to prevent damage from these two organizations should DP come to the result that there should be protection. Because if these domain names can be registered by third parties, then, you know, they can hardly ever be taken back. So damage will occur in the meantime. And therefore, they should be quarantined or give special treatment of whatever you might call it. I had raised the point that such harm might also happen or occur to organizations that might be granted protections during the PDP, and that therefore, you know, one might consider not limiting this this interim protection to the two organizations. This point was turned down due to the narrow mandate of the working group. But I'd just like to say that while I think that in principle no special protection should be granted without PDP, if an exemption is being made, I would have preferred to revert to the GAC and have the GAC added additional organizations at their discretion to the list of temporarily reserved names and to be able to protect at a broader scale. But now that, you know, the working group has turned that proposal down, I will not stand in the way of this recommendation, because I think that we need to make progress with this and to go on the record with this additional explanation. Thank you.
Thank you, Thomas. That's both helpful and clear to understand your position and how you intend to progress with it. Volker, your hand is up, and then Jeff.
Yes, first of all, I would like to thank the drafting team and its chair, Jeff Newman, for their hard work in this controversial matter. I do share the doubts that have been voiced by various parties, such as the ANCSG and Thomas Rickert, as well as many others that are reflected in the final GNSO issue report in this matter. In as far as they currently propose an unconditional, albeit temporary, reservation of those names, which would, in my view, negatively impact otherwise legitimate rights of third parties to apply for the registrations of some of these terms to be at least in the sunrise period, thereby effectively disenfranchising such third-party right holders from their ability to participate in the relevant sunrise phases. In my personal view, it would have been more elegant to allow applications for these names to be queued in the sunrise phase and warning the applicant that the domain name cannot be delegated at this time, maybe never. This way, if the restrictions were lifted, the domain names could have been delegated to the qualifying applicant. If the restriction had not been lifted, then an older delegation would have taken place. On the other hand, I do agree with the assessment of the drafting team regarding the problems arising from allowing the actual registration of domain names identical to these terms and a contrary outcome of the later PDP. Not allowing the registration of a domain name is certainly less problematic for third-party right holders than requiring registries to withdraw already delegated domain names at a later stage. I also agree with the assessment regarding the need of a PDP to determine if special protection is needed at all at the second level. This special blanket protection, however, is, in my view, a reversal of many years of practice policy and as such needs to be considered in the policy development process. I will support this motion, but only because, in my view, this process should be handled as quickly as possible and without further delays. I would like to recommend that in the implementation of these recommendations, the term reserve shall be interpreted lightly as only as not to allow the actual registration, i.e. allowing applications and queuing. As the rejection of this motion would only cause further delay in the time needed to resolve this issue, I will also vote in affirmative later on.
Thank you, Volker. Appreciate that clear and thorough and well thought out input. Jeff, you've taken your hand down. Alan, yours has appeared.
Yep. Thank you. In this case, I'm speaking on my own behalf, not on behalf of ALAC. It dawns on me that the substance of Volker's suggestion, that is to allow participation of registration of other of names, even if they're not delegated, might provide some interesting information to the PDP working group. That is, to what extent are there other people or other organizations that would like to register these names that are being prohibited from doing so? I'm not convinced there are any, but there may, and I'm talking purely about the Red Cross IOC, not about the larger IGO issue. So I personally tend to support the looser definition of reserved to allow such participation, but certainly not delegation or incorporation in the root zone of any second-level domains that overlap, if only to get the information about to what extent are there such other organizations competing for these names that we may be interested in. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. David, do you have something to add?
Yes, just wanted to say, it's no secret that the NCSG have never liked this, and we continue to be opposed, in particular the way in which the IRC and the Red Cross being thrown in together have always meant that this process has been flawed from the start. And we continue to oppose it. I don't think we need to go into too much detail other than to simply answer Alan's question about what are the organisations that might wish to consider this. And, of course, there are a number of organisations with legitimate trademarks on Olympic.
So thanks for those well thought out contributions. And I think what I would say is before we close the discussion and move to the vote, I'd encourage participation. There is an opportunity for clearly a second bite or an ongoing involvement in this issue on item 6, which we'll come to next. And so I'd encourage anyone with an interest in this area to actively participate in that in the work of the PDP working group. But for now, let's try and keep things moving along and put this motion to the vote, please.
Shall I do a roll call vote for you, Jonathan?
Yes, please, Glenn.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
Megali Pazello?
No.
Joy Lidicott on the Adobe Connect, please. Joy, have you voted? I'll come back to you. Oswaldo Novo?
Yes.
Maria Farrell?
No.
John Berard? Zahi Jamil for John Berard, please.
Yes.
Volker Greiman?
Yes.
Thomas Rickert?
This is Rickert. Thomas just notes in the chat that he was just disconnected, so he's trying to get back on the call.
Okay, thank you. Brian Winterfeld?
Abstain.
Abstain. David Cake?
No.
Mason Cole?
Yes.
Peter Rintfoss?
Abstain.
Jeff Newman? For
yes.
Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Yes.
Wendy Seltzer?
Glenn, Wendy and Joy have both voted no in the
no.
Chat.
Thank you. Ching Chao? Jeff Newman for Ching Chao, please?
Yes.
Wolfgang Kleinwester is absent. Zahid Jamil, for yourself, please.
Yes.
Lanri Ajayi?
Yes.
Yoav Karen?
Yes.
And Thomas, are you back on the call?
Yes, I'm back. It seems like I'm disconnected after 1 hour each time I'm participating. I vote yes.
Thank you. And Joy Lidicott has voted.
Glenn, before you tally, I'd like to make a point at the end of this, please.
No. Have I missed anybody? I don't think so. Please, Jonathan, go ahead.
Thanks, Glenn. I'd just like to make it clear to all councillors, and obviously in this case those that have abstained, to be aware that an abstention it will be tallied as a no, and to make absolutely clear that is the intended or at least understood outcome of abstaining. So just in case that impacts any of the councillors who have voted to abstain, to make them aware of that and be clear on that for the purposes now and indeed for future in case anyone wasn't aware of that consequence. Thank you.
Hey Jonathan, this is Jeff Newman. If I could just, point of order, usually when we have abstentions, there's a statement that's made by those that abstain as to the reason why.
Thank you, Jeff. That's a good point. Now, I think I heard an abstention from Petter. Were there any other abstentions?
There were two abstentions, Petter and Brian Winterfeld.
Those are both IPC. Would either of you like to speak as to why the IPC has elected to abstain in this particular vote?
This is Brian. I'll go first. The American
Red Cross is actually my client, which is stated in my statement of interest, which is why I abstained. And I believe that Petter may not have wanted to abstain because it's not an IPC position or conflict. It's just a personal one for me.
Thank you, Brian. That's helpful. Petter, could you indicate as to whether you did indeed intend to abstain and whether you'd like to change your vote or rationalize the abstention?
Well, considering how you would take the abstention, I changed it to a yes.
Thank you, Petter. I don't have any choice, just to be clear, that it is the rules of the voting.
Yes.
Thanks very much, Petter. So, for the record, Petter has changed his vote from an abstention to a yes.
Thank you. That has been noted. There is 100% in favour in the contracted party's house, and in the non-contracted party's house, 46.2% in favour. That is 6 people voted in favour in the non-contracted party's house. 5 people voted against. There was 1 abstention, and there was 1 person absent. So the vote passes, I believe. Margie, is that so? The motion passes.
Glenn, I'm sorry, can you repeat the percentage in the non-contracted party house?
46.2.
In favor?
In favor, yes.
No, it does not pass. You need a simple majority in both houses. You have it in the contracted party house, but you do not have it in the non-contracted party house.
Thank you, Margie. Thank you, Jonathan. The vote, the motion does not.
I have a question with Ulrich, point of order.
Yes,
Margie, is it the percentage, the majority of the votes, or the majority of the members? Just for clarification.
It's a majority of the votes in each house. So as you know, there's different numbers in each house. And as Jonathan mentioned, the denominator, when you're taking into account the vote, doesn't change when you have abstentions. So that's why it's important for folks to participate if there is a vote.
No, it was not related to the abstentions, just to the absence.
Right, but the absence is treated as an abstention, same as we discussed earlier on the earlier motion.
Yes,
and if Wolfgang had abstained, knew he was going to abstain, he could have sent a note into the council to Glenn to correct that. So.
Thank you.
All right, I think we probably have to move on from this then to the next item. So the motion is item 5, the temporary protection is not carried, and we'll move on to item 6 then. This is a working group charter for the PDP on protection of IGO, mm-hmm. INGO name. Lunray, this is a motion that you actually made, so I wonder if you would be so good as to make the motion, please.
Jonathan, sorry, this is Glenn. Yep. I see that the motion has not been seconded, or has it been in the meantime?
I'm happy to second it. This is Thomas speaking.
Thank you, Thomas.
Okay. This is Lunray. Thank you very much. Motion to approve the charter for the IGO, INGO Protection PDP Working Group. Whereas on the 17th October 2012, the GNSO Council initiated the policy development process on the protection of certain IGO and INGO names in all GTLDs and decided to create a PDP working group for the purposes of fulfilling the requirement of the PDP. Following a call for volunteers, a drafting team was formed and its members have developed a charter for consideration by the GNSO Council. the TNSO Council has reviewed the charter submitted by the drafting team. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the TNSO Council approves the charter and appoints as the TNSO Council liaison to the INGO Protection PDP Working Group. The GNSO Council further directs that the work of INGO Protection PDP Working Group be initiated not later than 14 days after the approval of this motion, until such a time as the working group can select a chair, and that chair can be confirmed by the GNSO Council. The GNSO Council liaison shall act as the interim chair. Thank you. The charter is on right. The URL listed here.
Sorry, Lanre, did I cut across you there? Did you want to finish something?
Yes, I was just trying to point out that the charter is on the link that is written on the in the Adobe Connect.
Thanks. So I'd like to call for discussion on this. This clearly follows on from the work that's been done, that was done on the drafting team with proposed temporary protections, and this now is the charter on a full PDP. Can I have any comments or input on this? Thomas.
Can you please bring up the charter on the Adobe? I should say that that was not the statement that I wanted to make. but there has been discussion on the in the working group yesterday regarding one paragraph of the charter. And I think it would just be fair to alert the council to that discussion, although I should also say that there has been no unanimity amongst the members of the working group in terms of support for that change, but there was some discussion surrounding, I have to find it now. If you look at at the mission and scope section, and then on page 3, the last but one bullet point currently reads, determine whether the current special protections being provided to RCRC and the IOC names are at the top and second level of the initial round of new GTLD should be made permanent for the RCRC and IOC names in all GTLDs, and if not, develop specific recommendations for appropriate special protections for these names. And a comment has been made that this thing suggests that regardless of the outcome of the PDP, there should be protections, because this says that, you know, that there should be definitions of what protections there should be under the PDP, and if not, there should be other special recommendations. And it was asked for the deletion of the second half or last third of this bullet point. This is just to sort of reflect the discussion that has been going on. Again, there have been objections to that change as well, so it's not a unanimous position of the working group. Nonetheless, I didn't want this to go unnoticed by the council.
Thanks, Thomas. David?
I just wanted to say I think this is speaking just generally in favour of the motion. I think this is the right approach. My impressions of the last several meetings with a lot of intense discussion is that this is going to be really quite a very complicated issue. This is going to be a very interesting one, especially if you're a lawyer with a bit of an academic bent. Some really interesting arguments are going to come up support the motion. We're in favour.
Thank you. Alan?
Thank you. With regard to the issue that Thomas raised, although in retrospect one could want better wording, the wording that's there now says, in the absence of support, that the work group will come up with other recommendations regarding their on the reservation. I read that as one of the as a recommendation they could make is no reservations. So I'm taking that in the widest term and can certainly live with the wording as it is, although in retrospect it could have been clearer. It's certainly the intent of many of the participants of the work group and at large included that this be a de novo review of the protections, and this work, the PDP working group must be allowed to come out with recommendations, everything from no recommendations, no reservations, to full reservations or whatever. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. That I think is the way I understand it. In any event, now I've got Thomas, David, and Alan all with your hands up, but I assume that you have spoken, and I think we should move to unless. Yeah, thank you. So I think we should move to vote on this motion then. Glenn, if you could take the vote, please.
I'll do that, Jonathan.
Affirmative.
Jeff Newman.
Sorry, it took a second to get off mute. Yes.
Jonathan Robinson?
Yes.
David Cake?
Yes.
Zay Jenny for John Barat,
yes.
Jeff Newman for Ching Charles, please?
Yes.
Wolfgang Klandester is absent. Nathan Cole?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nova?
Yes.
Peter Rinsford?
Yes.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
Brian?
Yes.
Thomas Rickett?
Yes.
Wendy Salsa? Wendy, can you hear me?
Glenn, she wrote on the chat that it's a yes.
Thank you. Joy yes, Lydica, will you please vote on the chat? You have Kieran?
Yes.
Maria Farrell?
Yes.
Zay Jamil?
Yes.
Joy Lidicott, I see, has voted yes. Thank you, Joy. Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Yes.
Lenre Ajayi?
Yes.
Magali Pazello?
Yes.
The vote passes. Wolfgang is absent. The motion passes unanimously with one person absent, Wolfgang Kleinbechter. For the rest, all the votes are positive.
Thank you, Glenn. I think we now need to move on. Wolf Ulrich, I know you have to leave the meeting relatively soon, but I think we brought this up so you would have an opportunity to talk to item 7, which is an update on the selection process for the Accountability and Transparency Review Team. So if you could give us an update there, Wolf Ulrich, and tell us a little bit more about that. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Jonathan. So I will be brief and hope that the council members are aware of what we are talking about. As you may remember, so we have this, ICANN has this affirmation of commitments, and several review teams in the first round had, and now was calling, I think today again was a reminder on the ICANN website for the membership of the accountability and transparency review team for the second round. So it's especially important to us to participate, since what I circulated earlier today is also the GAC is has some priorities on it, and one of the GAC priorities is related to the PDP. So what's going on right now is the following. The 5th of December is set as a deadline for applications to that review team. And the GNSO Council, the GNSO, has already approved for the first round of the ATRT a process. I do hope it's on the Adobe. I can't see the Adobe, Glenn, but I guess it's on the Adobe right now. And this process has been approved for all the further review teams to be established in context of the affirmation of commitments. Two things. At that time, the GNSO Council had a request to fill up four seats on this review team, one for each stakeholder group. And the stakeholder group should select their candidates from the candidate pool. And then the council has a certain procedure, which is described here in this paper, at the end to put forward to the selectors of these review teams the names. So this is the one thing. So we have decided last time that we would like to have four nominees from the GNSO to put forward. As it is, as last time Olaf Norling pointed out, it's up to the selectors themselves to decide at the end how many people should join the ATRT, that there is still uncertainty to us whether we could fill up until four seats. So this is one point. The other point is regarding the deadline, so and the follow-up process. If you look at the deadline of 5th of December, and according to this process, the council should take after the deadline, so which means the applications are coming in, and the applications, the GNSO-related applications, shall be sent to the GNSO. So within 3 weeks, means 21 days, the stakeholder groups should inform the council about their selection or their nominations, which would mean, in this case, specific case, that is Christmas, 26th of December. So we have to take this into consideration. And then the meeting, the council meeting after this deadline, should be taken to confirm four nominees and put it forward then to the selectors. And when I recall correctly, the next council telecom conference shall be on 17th of January. So we should take into consideration these three dates: 5th of December, application deadline; 26th of December, information from the SGs towards the council; and 17th of January, a decision to be taken by the council. Now, in detail it's described in this paper. But what I would like to say here is I see the need, or I would like to have a suggestion, that on behalf of the council, there should be sent a letter to the both selectors, meaning it's Fadi and the GAC chair, Heather Dryden, and pointing out in this letter, on the one hand, the main items coming from that process, meaning the deadlines and plus the request for four slots. The request from the GNSO that we would like to fill four seats. So this is my suggestion what I would like to put here on the table, and I would like to get support on that. And I would be happy to help to assist in drafting such a letter. So just in brief, this description of that, and if there are questions and anything else, we should start discussion about that. Thanks, Jonathan.
Thanks, Wolf. So if I understand correctly, you propose to write a letter requesting these four slots and that we endorse the proposed appointees from the different groups. Has anyone got any comments on this proposal, Wolf? And Wolf, can you confirm that you intend to lead or propose to lead the drafting of this letter?
Okay. Thanks. I do so. Yes. Is there anybody else or should we just put it a draft to the council list and everybody could comment?
Yeah,
I can do so.
You can either put a draft or the key points you would like to make. The choice is yours. It's either the substantive points you wish to make in the letter or indeed a draft of the letter, and we can take it from there. Has anybody got any comments on this approach that Wolf is proposing? Is anyone concerned about it or vehemently anti? If not, I suggest we take that as affirming Wolf's approach. Seeing no comments to the contrary, I know Brian wants to make a point, but I understand it's not on this subject, so I just want to close off this item 7 before we put Brian's hand up. David.
Yes, I just wanted to say that my understanding is that there will be four representatives of the GNSO on the review team.
It is. That is our intention, David. It is because following the last time, but as I heard from Olaf, he was very careful pointing out that it's the last decision is going to be taken by Fadi and Heather. So what I would like to have that we point out our request by writing this letter and telling them and referring to the last time and that's and some rationale about that and saying, okay, we would like to have four representatives again.
Yes. My concern on this is that if we hope to get four representatives and we give them exactly four nominees, then, of course, we run the risk that they will find that the nominees may not meet their needs for other purposes, you know, may not end up on the team for other purposes. So...
Well, you understand the following from the process. Well, we have... I'm sorry, Ralph, just to interrupt you. So we have, on the one hand, there are... the requirements for the requirements for which the applicants have to cope with are set out in the RFP, let me say so, and we have additional requirements with regards to the GNSO related aspects which are attached here to this paper. And this is that should be taken into consideration when we and the ESGs are going to nominate people. You are right. Well, it's at the end. It's up to Fadi and the others to accept this or not. In addition, we could have, if you have more applicants from the GNSO side, which we had last time as well, we could forward. So we have also to take into consideration the question of balancing gender and geographical diversity. This could lead us to put up to two candidates in reserve on the list.
Yes. My comment is essentially that and there are other reasons to do with balancing appropriate skills and so on. So my real comment here is really rather than give them sort of four candidates sort of take them or leave them, we might be, because of course we don't necessarily know the diversity that other you know, other SOs and ACs may not also abide by the diversity group. In order, it may be best to help out by offering more than the minimum number of candidates, is all I'm really saying. And essentially, I'm saying I think we should take up your option four there, even in the absence of a pressing need to from within the GNSO.
Thanks, David. So
other than that, your scheme looks great.
Thanks, David.
Essentially, we offer slightly more candidates. There's more. We will offer some. We'll make just Fadi and Fahedda's job a little bit easier.
Yeah, I'm sure you have some reserve candidates. Naheed, do you have something to add in either in support of David's suggestion or in addition to anything that's been discussed? Zahid?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear you clearly. Sorry. Thank you. Yes, Jonathan, I just wanted to sort of ask, you know, last time when we did this, last time around, there was some discussion back and forth, and there were some delays in our response because constituencies had also indicated that they wanted to be part of this. Wolf would remember, recall this from the last process. And I was wondering, are we sort of, are we going to follow the same process as we did last time, give an opportunity to constituencies also to try and see whether they can actually come up with consensus individuals who can go on to the accountability and transparency group, et cetera, and put these forward? How do we want to do this? Because if we move away from the previous process, we may have to go back to a constituency and explain why that has happened.
Well, if I could answer to that, well, we have agreed to this process. Right now, it was a lengthy discussion, you know, and how to cover, you know, constituencies' requirements. This has to be discussed within the different stakeholder groups under which or in which the constituencies are working with. So I wouldn't like to really start from scratch because it took us months to find this process. And at the end, the council that time, well, he moved that process. So there was a motion about that, and they pointed out that is the process to be used also for all other review teams in the future. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Wolf.
Thanks, Wolf. So I think it sounds like there is support for your approach. I think we can take it online. You can start to draft at least the substantial points of the letter we're going to write. And I think we should bear in mind certainly the point on that we may wish to consider some reserve candidates if for whatever reason the first choice candidates don't provide the relevant level of diversity. Wouldn't like them to then be struck off and reduce the participation. So perhaps you can bear that in mind
yes.
If you're preparing it.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm sorry I have to leave right now, so as I pointed out. Thank you very much.
Wolf, before you leave, Brian has a particular point he would like to make,
okay.
So I'd like you to hear that. Brian, can we hear what you have to say? I hear something that you consider to be particularly important.
Certainly. I wanted to seek clarification. I have stated in my statement of interest that I do represent the American Red Cross as a client, my firm, Steptoe & Johnson. My previous understanding was that required me to abstain from votes that engaged in the Red Cross. I want to seek clarification to make sure that my understanding is correct, because obviously it was critical to the vote earlier that we had.
Is anyone from staff able to provide a clarification as to this issue?
Jonathan, yes, it's Margie, if I may. Essentially, having an interest in a motion does not require you to abstain. The rules are set up in the operating rules and procedures so that you disclose that information and so that it's available to the rest of the council to know that you have an interest. But as in other votes, it's often the situation that a counselor would have an interest in a particular issue. So there's no requirement that you abstain simply because it's your client or your company has a financial interest in the matter.
Thanks, Marty. This is an extraordinary situation and one that I don't relish having to deal with on my first meeting as chair. But I think what I'm understanding you to say, Brian, is that having heard this, this may change the way in which you would have voted on the motion.
Absolutely. I would have voted yes, which would not only be my own vote, but also the vote that the IPC would like to make as well.
Well, this is it's an extraordinary situation. I see that I have a comment from Joy, who clearly doesn't feel happy that with the prospect of reopening the motion. The difficulty I have is that we're still within the meeting in which we've discussed this. The circumstances are clearly something unusual or extraordinary, but you know, I wonder if there is any precedent to doing this. Is anyone able to give me any indication or steer as to the precedent for doing something like this in the past?
Jonathan, this is Zahid.
Yes, Zahid.
I can't off the top of my head recall any precedents of this sort of nature, but I do recall the fact that we do allow people to, even after the call vote, we do allow individuals to clarify, as we did, for instance, while the vote had been done, to move from abstention to actually yes vote, something we did on this call. And I think it's absolutely clear that on this call this has happened, so it's not as if we've gone to a separate meeting or gotten off the call. I think it's fair that the vote should be counted if there was a confusion or a lack of information that Brian may have had at that point.
I think the only reasonable way to do this is to reopen the vote entirely on the motion and make sure that this hasn't impacted anyone else's vote or position, because it's not, I think, to simply allow a change, I mean, I understand the motivation for it, but the only way I can see this is to reopen the vote completely on the motion and call for a full fresh vote on the motion. I hear you on the chat, Joy, that you disagree, but there are points counter to that, and it's an unenviable position. But nevertheless, I think I'm minded to agree that we are still in the meeting. There's been a point of clarification, and as I say, I think we should permit all councillors to reopen to recast their vote in the context that we now understand. So I suggest we move back to that motion before others leave the call and call for a vote on motion 5, this temporary protection of IOC RC name.
Jonathan, this is Thomas. I think both Ulrich and Wendy have left.
Can you confirm that, Wolf? Ulrich, are you still on the call? And Wendy, are you still on the call?
Ulrich has disconnected, Jonathan.
Marika?
Yes, well, I was going to say the same, and I don't see Wendy connected either.
No. Actually, Wendy is connected, but I think that she is not on the call anymore. I will check with the operator.
Well, I don't think we have. I don't think it's reasonable to, in my opinion, to recast the vote. We simply can't do it if others have left the call. So, I mean, Zahid, you make the point that we should be able to make that the vote should be able to be recast and.
Yes, I mean, Jonathan, what I was saying was, wasn't there something else early? I mean, I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly which one, where an abstention was changed to a yes vote just now, half an hour ago, 20 minutes ago?
Well, that was Petter's vote. He abstained, and I wanted to make it clear before we closed the vote on the motion that people understood the consequence, and I think I made that very clear, during Before we closed and counted the vote, I wanted to make it clear to councillors that they understood the consequences of abstaining. So I think we're in a very, very difficult position now, because we did close the vote. Councillors have left.
Just to confirm, Jonathan, that Wendy and Wolf Ulrich have disconnected.
Yeah, I'm just waiting for a couple of comments to come up in the chat then. Yeah, Jeff, that's a fair point. Right, can I have some? I see a couple of people have got their hands up. Brian, is your Margie? Let me hear from you first, then, because you may have a point of order on this. So if I can hear from you first, then we'll go to the councillors.
Yes, this is Margie. The other thing I wanted to point out is, this is something that the rules don't really cover. Perhaps the motion gets, resubmitted for the next meeting if it's unable to, be addressed in this meeting. So that's something to consider as well. Again, there's nothing. I don't recall dealing with a specific instance in the past.
Yeah. Thank you, Margie. David, let me just try and cut this conversation short. Given the circumstance, given where we are now, I find it very difficult to either reopen the vote and allow a change to the vote that's been closed, especially since council have left the call. I agree with Jeff that in leaving the call, council should ideally designate a proxy. But given where we are, I think we have little choice but to accept the vote as it stands. And if in the final event, the motion is remade for the next council meeting, we'll consider it on its own merits there. So that's the position I think we have to take. David, do you have anything to add to that, or anything that contradicts?
No, essentially, I just wanted to say that in my opinion, it amounts to reconsideration of previous business, and that there should be and usually that's a reasonably difficult thing to do. That's it, really.
I accept that. Thanks. Margie, do you have something else to add?
No, sorry, I forgot to turn down my hand.
All right. So I think that presented us all with a particularly difficult situation, and I think we'll have to leave it at that and proceed with the rest of the business of the meeting. Right. We're on to the issue of item 8, and we're running a little short of time, so I'm going to have to look at this agenda and think about what we can work. I think we'll have a very brief update on the Consumer Trust so Barry, if you could keep it very short and just to the point, so we can make sure we get through the other key items on the agenda, please.
Jonathan, this is Thomas.
Thomas, yes.
Sorry for interrupting, but I'm not clear as to where we are now. Are you considering the vote that has been cast as null and void, and it's going to be repeated?
I think we have no choice to accept the vote as was cast. I find it difficult. I mean, I don't know what basis we could consider it null and void. Brian's indicated that he didn't, that he may well have voted differently had he fully understood the consequences or understood the context and what he was and wasn't able to do. But that doesn't, he did cast it at the time, and I'm given that other councillors have left, I think we have to accept the vote as it stands, and that that's my view.
I was not suggesting that it should be considered null and void. I was just not clear as to where we stand now. So we leave this meeting having the vote as it was cast.
Yes.
And leave it to reconsideration for Brian, for example, to get that tackled.
If the motion is remade, we consider it under those circumstances. Other than that, we're left with the motion voted on as it was in this meeting.
I'm not sure I understand. Jonathan, I really sympathize with the difficulties now, and I'm really sorry for you to being forced to manage it.
I'm just still not clear as to what the next steps, if any, would be. So if nobody takes any action, the vote will stand as it was cast.
Correct.
And we will only reopen in case, yeah, I think the alternative would be that Brian asks for reconsideration of the decision due to the fact that you have not accepted his request to change his vote, right?
You mean reconsideration of the vote or of my decision?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to get my head around. Because I'm not clear as to what the status is now. Is this sort of twisting in the wind?
Jeff's point is right. I don't have a process for reconsideration. We don't have a process for reconsideration. We're left with a motion that was made, a motion that was, to all intents and purposes, properly voted on, albeit with what we now understand to be a form of misunderstanding on the part of one of the councillors. But we're left with that motion having been voted, and I think the only option is as Brian says, if it can be reintroduced at a future meeting. There's nothing, as I understand it, to stop the motion being reintroduced or made again at a future meeting. It's just that I don't think there's anything we can do at this meeting.
No, it's okay. I was not suggesting one or the other. I was just seeking clarification on the status. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Thomas. Right, so moving on then, Barry, if you're on the line, if you could give us a brief update on the consumer trust issue.
Yes, I am. Thank you, Jonathan. As the council is aware, during the Toronto session, there was a motion submitted for the consumer metrics advice by John Berard, and that was later withdrawn, given a few reservations about some of the metrics and the scope of GTLD types that they were attempting to measure within consumer trust and consumer choice. Since then, the working group has reconvened briefly for a very long 3-hour session to update a few of the metrics. Within that time frame, we have tried to submit the advice letter back to the council, but there are some continued issues with some of the metrics, so we're working on completing that work. The working group is meeting next week, and we'll continue to meet for the next several sessions with the expectation to ready the final advice letter for submission to the GNSO Council, as well as the motion for the December session. So that's basically the only update that I have for right now. If anybody has any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Thank you.
Thanks, Barry. So we anticipate that additional work will be done in the interim and that this is likely to come to the council at the next meeting.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
So I don't see any hands raised, and so I'm going to move us rapidly on to item 9 then, which is the URS. You'll recall that Olaf from ICANN staff updated us on this issue in Toronto and advocated that we form some form of drafting team or group to deal with policy issues in and around the URS. The council view at the time was that there was an open process, an RFI for a provider, and that there was no work that the council should or needed to do in the interim. But we have since, and I want to remind you, heard from Olaf, who believes that there may well be some consistent across all respondents to the RFI potential policy changes required. So I think I'd just like to take this opportunity to draw Council's attention to Olaf's letter, which I circulated to the Council, or Marika circulated to the Council on the 6th of November. Please have a look at that, in particular if you've indicated an interest in participating in this area, we may well want further confirmation from Olaf once the RFI process closes on the 20th of November, if indeed. Thank you for that. Letters are now up in the Adobe, and it's really the key sentence for me is about whether, is probably the last paragraph, as to whether proposed adjustments by providers would constitute policy changes or merely interpretation. So please, those of you who have volunteered to potentially participate in a group dealing with this, if you could keep current with it, so because this is one of those items that's, while not absolutely in the critical path, is ultimately in the critical path of the new GTLD program, so has both an urgency and an importance. So I think that's probably all I'll say on that. Does anyone else have anything to add? Yeah,
I mean, I want to just make the point on the record that just because we have people standing by ready just in case something comes up, I want to make it clear that we are not necessarily by this action supporting the fact that there is a need to have changes to policy. So I want that very clear, that we're on standby, we're waiting to see if something happens, but we really want to see the RFI responses, and we should not assume that there will be changes at all. We should just be kind of on standby.
Thanks, Jeff, and that is my understanding as well, and it's just in being on standby to keep current as it evolves. I should say that I wrote a note to the council, and just for the record, I wrote a note saying that I thought that I may be involved. At this stage, I can see no basis on which I'll be involved with any submission to the RFI. So, you know, that prospective or potential conflict that no longer exists. Moving on to the next item then, which is item 10, Margie has some input, I believe, some form of update from the board meeting. If you recall, we prepared a letter to the board covering our input, and although it wasn't, we weren't able to form consensus input on the...
Yes, come in.
Excuse me? Is there someone wanting to speak?
I think he's been disconnected.
All right. So just you'll recall that we had to, in order to contribute to the board's deliberations on this, I was forced to respond fairly quickly and rapidly send the letter with the composite of our input on this rather than the consensus. And that was done, and the board has subsequently met, and Margie has an update for us from their 8th of November meeting. Go ahead, Margie.
Yes, Jonathan. Hi, it's Margie. I also would invite David Olive to provide an overview of what happened at the board meeting last week, since a lot of this affects the GNSO Council. We're going to make this update. David will make some remarks, and then I'll follow up to identify how it affects the Council.
Thank you, Margie. This is David Olive for the record. As you know, the review team's work was encouraging a fundamental reexamination of our approach to GTLD registration data, as well as renewed efforts and new efforts on who is enforcement. Last Thursday, the board met to review the review team's recommendations and took the opportunity to launch a new effort to tackle this GTLD registration data challenge and launch a new approach in its two directory services. In parallel, of course, the board reaffirmed ICANN's commitment to fully enforce existing GTLD policy and contractual obligations. They think this is very important. They take this those recommendations of the review team very seriously and want to make sure that that this is important for consideration, and it's part of a path that is essential for ICANN's responsibility to act in the public interest. Specifically, the board tasked the CEO to launch some new efforts, and Margie can talk a little bit more about that, but I just want to highlight the seriousness and importance of these recommendations and how the board has taken that very, very seriously. Margie?
Yes, so essentially what the board came up with, and you'll see this in the materials that get published next week. They're currently finessing the rationale for the resolution. But essentially, the board has asked the CEO to convene an expert working group And this expert working group would be asked to create material to launch a GNSO policy process. Specifically, the group is being asked to produce something within 90 days, and ideally a straw man model would come out of this effort for managing GTLD registration data. And as a second part of that, in the resolution, you'll see a call for an issue report on the board's side that would ask for this work to be done in the GNSO on an expedited basis. So the board is essentially calling for an expedited GNSO policy development process. And the idea is that the work from the expert group would inform the issue report and the PDP to follow. The board is also asking that registrars, registries, and staff address the working group's output in contractual negotiations and in the registry contracts as appropriate. So this is a very broad approach to who is. And then as the work gets done by this expert group, they imagine that there will be other issues to address in the PDP and that the PDP that is being called on would look for a consensus policy that addresses the purpose of collecting, maintaining, and gaining access to registration data, and also address the related privacy access and accuracy issues. So data protection is also an element of what the PDP would address. And the board expects that the work will take into account some of the previous work by the GNSO Council, by the SAC. You'll see that this resolution really takes into account the SAC recommendation that work be done specifically on the purpose of CWIS, as well as a lot of the guidance that's been received by the GAC and the at-large community. And then it will give you more information on some of the other aspects of the resolution.
Thanks, Marty. I think my thought on this is significant information. It's new information. It's something for the council to absorb and digest, and we're up against it as far as time for a variety of reasons in this meeting. So I realize that the councillors are going to want to have substantial discussion on this. We don't have the information in writing yet. Very much appreciate the update. But so just ask councillors to confine their discussion or just be careful with how much we go into this without having properly seen the materials. But Mason, I hear you have a point, or have you withdrawn based on the remark I just made?
I withdraw on the basis of the remark you just made, but I do look forward to much more information on this because it sounds like a very comprehensive yet very confusing approach involving PDPs, contract negotiation, and as Jeff just said, an expert group to set up an expert group for a PDP. I'm having a very difficult time following this, and I'm very much looking forward to clarification.
No, it's clearly too much to digest and really what I hope councillors will appreciate is that staff have taken us into their confidence, given us an update, given us an opportunity to hear things. You know, there's the sort of breaking news aspect of it, but certainly it looks like we'll need to do some more on this. Jeff?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, and I put it in the chat, if we can, rather than just getting this document at some point in the next week, if we can ask ICANN staff to set up an immediate webinar in the next couple weeks, obviously after some of the, or at least the November holidays, maybe in the first week of December, if ICANN could have a webinar going through this in detail, because just having this on paper, And even, you know, the finessing of the fact that a board resolution has to be finessed for a couple of weeks, the rationale is, to me, just sounds like trouble. So if we could have a webinar for the first week of December that goes through this, have some board members present that they could explain it to us in their own words, that would be fantastic.
Great, Jeff. That's a very practical suggestion. Staff may wish to respond now or simply take that back and see if they can follow up on that.
Yes, this is Margie. I think a webinar is a good idea. I'll take it back and see if we can set that up and get members of the board that are that essentially address these issues. I don't know about that aspect of it, but certainly getting more information sounds like the right approach, and it's a very complex issue. So we'll take it upon ourselves to try to schedule that after the holidays.
Thanks very much, Margie. Now, we have a couple more items, and we're heading up to 5 minutes before the hour now, and I'm conscious that it's important for a variety of reasons to try and finish on time. The two items the three items that remain. I had spoken with Rob Hogarth about item 12, and he is aware that we may have needed to sacrifice this item. We will bring it up on the next agenda. It will come back to the council for Rob to update us on the Structural Improvements Committee work in this area. And so I would like to push that to the next council meeting. Defensive registrations have been something that's been on our agenda, which is item 11, for some time that we never completely closed off. There was a request made for us to it was staff briefing paper and the new GTLD request for us to consider this. I don't believe we've adequately closed it off, but I am aware this is a topic over the next couple of days in the meetings in LA, and given that this is one element of the topics that will be discussed, it seems appropriate to see what the outcome, if any, from LA is in this area before we reconsider it. So I don't think we should take it off the agenda by any means, but there are literally current developments going on here. So are there any comments on either of those items and it's really the moving of both items to the next meeting, and is there any comment or question over that before we do move on to item 13? Thank you. We've clearly taken a bit of time on some of the other issues that perhaps weren't completely expected. We are missing a liaison to the CCNSO since Rafiq has left the board, and I'd very much like to call for a volunteer. If no one volunteers on the call now, we'll put something else on the list. Is anyone willing or able to volunteer for this role? All right, seeing no hands at the moment, we will put that out to the list. Is there anything else that anyone would like to volunteer under any other business before we wrap things up as we come up to the hour? Thomas Ricketts.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is just to let you know that following up on some discussion on the mailing list that Jennifer will be the rep on the SIC, and I would be the alternative. So we have found a resolution in the meantime on this.
Thanks, Thomas. That's helpful to know that. And then we'll seek a volunteer for the CCNSO rep in on the list. All right, thanks very much, everyone. I appreciate that you've worked hard with me to keep this on time and comprehensive. We've clearly got new items on the table. We've had a challenging issue to navigate on the vote, but appreciate your time and effort on this, and we'll be in touch soon. Thanks very much, everyone.
So long.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Have a good day, and good night's sleep for those who got up early.